This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Hey, very good morning to you and a good Wednesday morning to you as we get rolling here on Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio. About this time of year, we've got two things going on in the NFL. We've got all of the playoff games that are going on. This round is the divisional round, so now we're down to eight. Well, whether it's the wild card round or the divisional round, there's one other thing that we're dealing with in the NFL, and that is the coaching carousel, right? Who has jobs open, and who are the available candidates for those openings? And as two teams exited the playoffs over the weekend, the Dallas Cowboys and then Monday night, the Philadelphia Eagles, there were a lot of speculation of whether Dallas would move on from Mike McCarthy and the Eagles might move on with Nick Sirianni. No decision has been made as of right now, but you never know with this show. It could pop up at any minute. But when you really think about this, we are in the greatest coaching carousel, jobs available and who's available for them, I have ever witnessed. And a lot of it has to do with Bill Belichick. A lot of it has to deal with the fact that the New England Patriots, for about 2 seconds, had a job opening. Today they will be introducing Gerard Mayo, who was hired almost the second they announced that Bill Belichick and the team were parting ways. And that Bill Belichick is available to be hired as a head coach. So much so that the other day he interviewed with the Atlanta Falcons. You've also got Jim Harbaugh, who, whether or not he won a national championship in Michigan, it wouldn't have mattered, really. He still would have been an incredibly large name going back to the NFL and indeed where he wants to go. But you add the fact that he won a national championship to the resume, and he's as big of a name as we're getting outside of Bill Belichick in terms of being available for a head coaching position. Pete Carroll is out there if you want to hire him. Pete Carroll. National championships with USC, Super Bowl with the Seattle Seahawks. If Mike McCarthy is let go, the Dallas Cowboys, one of the premier franchises in the world, will be looking for a new head coach. Alabama just saw Nick Saban retire, and for a brief period of time, one of the greatest college dynasties in the history of the sport was also looking for a new head coach. Oh, there's no doubt the last 2 weeks since Black Monday to now has created one of the greatest angles for stories and possibilities we have seen. Now, in some situations, like at Alabama, they went out and got Kalen DeBoer really quick. Because in college, you better get your guy really quick. Recruiting day is coming. You need to hang on to the recruits that the school was getting, and you got to start talking to the recruits you were getting for who your previous employer was. So you don't have the amount of time like you are seeing with the Carolina Panthers or the Atlanta Falcons or the Tennessee Titans, who got rid of their coaches relatively early and are still haven't decided on who their coach is going to be. I'll give you a quick thing about Alabama. When you're especially an elite college program, you have to act really quick. And the reason you have to act really quick is you can't take a lot of no's. A number of years ago, Florida had parted ways with Steve Spurrier. He left to become the head coach in Washington in the NFL, and they were looking for a new head coach. And they went to a couple of people. One was Bob Stoops at Oklahoma. The other one was Mike Shanahan in Denver. They actually stopped in Denver to talk to him to see if he would go to the college game from the Broncos. When they couldn't get both of those guys to leave their situations, he didn't want to leave empty-handed, and they ended up hiring the guy that would not say no, and that was Ron Zook. And they ended up hiring Ron Zook. And it's the same thing with Alabama, is that you could go to people and say, would you like to, you know, follow Nick Saban? And they would say no, but Kalen DeBoer was not going to be one of them. You need to make sure when you are looking at the landscape of the people you're going to hire, that that individual is absolutely going to say yes without hesitation. And Kalen DeBoer said yes without really any hesitation. But the NFL, you can take your time a little bit. You can really process what is going on. And you think about this for a second. We still, again, at this time, don't know the status of where Mike McCarthy is with the Cowboys. Maybe he stays. Maybe they give him an extension. Maybe they fire him. Jerry Jones is more patient than other teams in the NFL. But at the same time, what is he looking at 82 years old? The one chance that he has in his entire existence as head coach, as owner of the Dallas Cowboys, to get Bill Belichick to be the head coach. A guy that he's admired, a guy that he's wanted to be the head coach of the Dallas Cowboys, and now he has, the first time in his life, a chance to make that happen. Does he stay with McCarthy and the consistency of regular seasons that produce double-digit wins, in fact, 12 over the last 3 years, in each of the last 3 years, or does he bring in Belichick to take that 12-win regular season team and find a way to get it over the hump just enough to at least get to an NFC conference? If you're looking to ever hire Bill Belichick, this is the answer. Now, the reason Bill Parcells is on my brain is because that's exactly what he did with Bill Parcells. He saw an opportunity that was never going to come again, that was unlikely to ever approach his desk again. Parcells was either going to be the coach of the Dallas Cowboys or he was going to be running a team in the front office. But he was not going to be available 3 years from now, 5 years from now, 6 years from now. And because Jones is an owner that doesn't fire guys after one season or a season and a half, like, let's say, Dave Tepper, he knew that whoever he was going to hire to be the head coach of the Cowboys was likely going to be around for a while. And that's what I wonder about with this. If Belichick lands with the Atlanta Falcons, just the team he interviewed with, but who knows, then he's going to miss out the opportunity because it's not coming along again. And it's crazy because this time of year, we're always interested in the young up-and-coming coordinators. Bob the Bobby Slowicks, the Mike McDonalds of the world, right? The guys that are going to be the new Sean McVays, the new Kevin O'Connors, right? The young coordinator, Mike Tomlin, for that matter. The young coordinators who are working their way up, who are in their mid-30s, who are looking to land into the NFL to get that first head coaching job because they are the hottest ticket in the league. And little did we know that the coaching carousel that we've got right now is now penetrated by the presence of a 6-time Super Bowl champion in Bill Belichick, a college national champion and Super Bowl winner in Pete Carroll, and also Jim Harbaugh, who went to a Super Bowl coaching the Niners and just won a national championship less than 2 weeks ago. Like, that's what we're seeing now. So yes, Mike McDonald's phone is still blown up as he's doing Zoom interviews, still guiding the Ravens in the playoffs, but you can still kind of chat with them virtually. You just can't do an in-person interview with any coach that's on a playoff team. But just think, those alone have muddled a lot of the idea that there is a group, a crop of young, upcoming, you know, Brian Callahans of the world that are coming up that want to take a shot at being a head coach somewhere. So this has been the most fascinating 2 weeks, or close to 2 weeks, that we've had at this period of time for this issue. And again, whether it is a coach retiring and them hiring a guy that was coaching in the national championship like the Alabama situation, or Gerard Mayo getting the job 30 seconds after the announcement of the departure of Bill Belichick, you've got a Chargers team that's wondering if Jim Harbaugh is even going to be into the NFL, interested in the NFL. Belichick is showing up to interview with teams he's probably not going to be coaching, but just to remind maybe places that he wants to be a coach at, to better get off the ball and, you know, get this thing moving. If Bill Belichick wants to coach the Dallas Cowboys, for example, one of the best things to do is show up in Atlanta and interview for Arthur Blank. By the way, what is that interview like? Like when they say Bill Belichick interviewed with the Atlanta Falcons, what conversation is that like? Right?
Can you list your previous experiences?
Exactly. It says here you won 6 Super Bowls. Yeah, one was against your team. Don't quite remember that, but that's okay. If you say so, I guess we'll do that. No, seriously, we were up 28-3. Don't quite remember that, but again, if you say so, we'll take your word for it.
You know, I want to
add, what conversation are we having in an interview with Bill Belichick?
I want to add something to this too, because you're talking about, you know, this is the most exciting time, like from the coach's perspective. Like, we have some very talented coaches. we also have some incredible teams.
That's right.
That are in need of coaches.
That's right.
And we could, and like you said, you were hinting before, we could have two more teams that are, you know, I mean, it's amazing that these two teams might need coaches as well.
And if you just forget the fact that, again, Kalen DeBoer and Gerard Mayer were hired really, really quickly.
Yeah.
But if you really look at who had coaching openings just in the last 2 weeks, some of the iconic teams in football, Alabama, New England, right? I mean, just those two alone are, you know, could be Dallas. Just like you're not only talking, the Raiders are looking for a head coach. I mean, oh, and I totally forgot, Mike Vrabel is floating around out there in the netherworld looking for a job. Like, if the Cowboys do have an opening, if they do part ways with Mike McCarthy, you're talking about some of the more iconic football brands needing a head coach. And again, two of them wrapped it up pretty quickly. I mean, Kalen DeBoer was fast. Like, in a blink of an eye, I was like, oh, there he goes. All right, he went from Washington to Alabama in a span of 3 days. I mean, just coming home from the national championship game to leaving for Tuscaloosa rather fast. And Mayo was always the guy it was in waiting, so the Patriots could just jump right in and promote him. But it really is an incredible time. You know, it looks like Antonio Pierce is going to get the job with the Raiders. If Harbaugh decides exactly that he wants to go into the NFL, I think the Chargers have the inside track. But the Belichick factor is fascinating to me. Because what exactly does he want? Is there a current team that could provide him that? He probably wants a team that could win a Super Bowl very quickly. And the team that has that has a head coach already.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That is Ron with two N's. Glad you could be with us as we are getting ready for the four games this weekend. The divisional rounds. Green Bay going to San Francisco. Houston and Baltimore getting those number one seeds into the mix. You've got the Bills and the Chiefs. By the way, the Bills completely banged up in the defense. Completely banged up. Tim Graham's got a great article at The Athletic today, just going over all of the injuries and all of the patchworking that Sean McDermott and the Bills defensive team has had to do to try to put a defensive unit out there. It's one of the reasons why the Steelers were able to creep back into that football game a little bit. There were enough injuries in the secondary, but they're trying to piece it together because Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs could take advantage of that coming up on Sunday at Highmark Stadium. And then, of course, the Lions and the Buccaneers, where basically you need to sell your house to get a ticket to the game at Ford Field. Now they're all catching the fever of the Lions.
As well they should.
And they will, as well they should. As well they should. So
I mean, they haven't seen this in how long?
Forever. 32 years, that was their last playoff win. So
I know, the last playoff appearance was... Matt Stafford brought him to the playoffs, right?
He did. Yeah, he did. It wasn't that long ago. They played, I think, 2016, something. It wasn't that long ago that they were in the playoffs, but they hadn't won a playoff game since the 90s. So, but anyway, like, he lost to Dallas or something like that. I forget what it was, but I think it was to the Cowboys a couple of years ago. But they just never got a playoff victory. Now that they've got this playoff victory, it's, you know, hey, these tickets are going to go for $1,000. So that's good. Again, good matchups this weekend. Again, are we missing the Joe Burrows of the world? Yeah. But you know what? In the end, that's what this league is. The league in the end, it's still compelling because the end result of it is still something we sort of cherish and remember. I got to be honest with you. And I've been seeing these ads, and they've been kind of all over the place during the football weekend, about this XFL, UFL, USFL merger that is happening this summer. I mean, have you seen these ads where they're really promoting it? And they're using, like, television personalities to promote it by saying things as if they were talking about it on a show and using the cuts into the promotional. And, like, you have got, like, Colin Cowherd saying, this guarantees the league is here to stay. No, it doesn't. And now that you've got this spring league, what this spring league is going to need is what the NFL has, which is you've got to get people really, really emotionally invested in the result. And it's not just betting and all that other stuff. It is really getting a feeling of there is the prize at the end of this season is really big, even if it's not your team. And that's how you can get a league to last long enough. Once you get people really emotionally invested, yeah, you can watch it for football's sake, but at the same time, if you're not really invested in the outcome, it can only go so far. So when you have the playoffs, you can say, oh, we're missing this, we're missing that, we're missing this person, missing that person. Yeah, we can do that. I mean, yep, Joe Burrow and the Bengals are not in the playoffs, and we thought Aaron Rodgers was going to be, and he's not. And we thought that maybe the Chargers were going to be, and they were not. And all of that, the Dallas Cowboys making a Super Bowl run, and now they are not. But in the end, there's some really good storylines, and then you start figuring out what exactly you've got, and they are really fascinating. Yes, the Jordan Love story about being, you know, in the playoffs in his first year as a starter and the Green Bay Packers back in the playoffs doing something they couldn't do last year with Aaron Rodgers, that might last one more game. That's it. Maybe Saturday night that story comes to an end, but it is still a story to process into the offseason. Same thing with the Houston Texans. The Texans could be like Texan fans could feel the same way I felt on Monday watching the Steelers, which is, you know what? Glad they were here. Glad they made it a one-score game. But you know what? All right, it came to an end. Or they may pull off one of the bigger upsets we've seen in the AFC, going to Baltimore and beating the Ravens on the road with a rookie quarterback. Like, these are really great angles that the league has, and not to mention the Lions. I'm more cynical than I am sentimental, but even I can't help feeling a little pull for a fan base that has been told. I mean, how many years were they told their team was so worthless that you're ruining my Thanksgiving by putting them on TV? Right? And I've said this many times. Every Lion, every Lion I had the chance to interview that played on the team, like in the 70s and 80s and whatnot, that I've had a chance to interview, and I talked to them about the Thanksgiving game. I talked to them about how important the Thanksgiving game is to the city and how important it is to the franchise. And for years, we had people screaming to the heavens that the NFL, we deserved better as fans than to put the crappy Lions on my Thanksgiving Day television. As if the NFL could ever predict which teams they could shove on you on Thanksgiving and make it work. Every team they'll put on, maybe they'll have a bad year. Maybe their quarterback will be hurt. But they gave you the Lions consistently because it was a tradition. And every year when they were bad and terrible, people would complain about it. You know, and then with Stafford and Johnson, they were never really terrible, terrible. They weren't like the 0-16 Kitna years. But we would still say, don't we deserve better? Shouldn't we have other teams? So this Lion fan base, who has not tasted in the sweet taste of victory in 32 years, is now a win awake for competing for the conference championship. And if Green Bay, a division rival, a hated division rival, the team Dan Campbell absolutely wanted to spoil in the last game of the season last year, if they could just help them out on Saturday night, knocking off the mighty, mighty 49ers, the game would be in Detroit if they passed the Buccaneers. Imagine that. The last game you could have before the Super Bowl being at Ford Field. So there's a lot of great, I mean, there's a lot of great storylines, but they're storylines that go into fan bases across the country that aren't interested in either one of these teams or don't care about either one of these teams outside of maybe having money on it or maybe outside of, you know, some other thing. You can be living in Tampa and getting ready for the Buccaneers-Lions game and getting your face painted and all that while you watch TV with your watch party. But you can be very, very, very interested in Houston-Baltimore. Could be very, very invested in Buffalo-Kansas City. Because that's the way the league has been. That's what other sporting leagues in the country have aspired to. We want you to be interested in the NBA Finals, even if it doesn't have a Celtics or the Lakers or whoever. We want you to be interested in it. We want you to be interested in Major League Baseball's World Series, even if your team's not in it. And those leagues have struggled with that. to try to find a championship or a playoff format that does well enough to attract a people from outside. But the NFL has zero problems with this. And there are people doubting the 23 million people that watch Peacock. I saw an article yesterday where they were like saying there was a little doubt in these numbers. I couldn't care less. If it's not 23 million, it's probably 20. I mean, I think it's nickels and dimes. I don't think we're arguing 23 million or 19,000. Right? We know these numbers are big, and I think that's what makes this great. And that's why at the beginning of the show, you talk about this coaching carousel, you talk about these coaching openings, these coaching vacancies. I mean, the idea that Bill Belichick could be a Dallas Cowboys head coach if Jerry Jones parts ways with Mike McCarthy and if Belichick is interested in becoming the head coach of the Cowboys and working with Jerry Jones. I mean, these are two universes that would smash, and I would be wondering if we'd all be alive at the end of it. I mean, seriously. The presence of Bill Belichick and the presence of the Dallas Cowboys merged into one would be nuts. And I don't even know if it'd succeed or not. Right? And it's the same idea that you're getting around this league where if you are a fan base and your team right now today needs a head coach, if you're Carolina, Washington, Atlanta, the Chargers, the Raiders, the Seahawks, Tennessee, if your team is in need of a head coach, what do you want? What would be the sellable person for that job? A former head coach that has won a Super Bowl, a former head coach that has won a national championship in college football and has NFL experience, another head coach that has won a national championship in college football and a Super Bowl, another head coach who's overachieved in his 6 years in Nashville and is a former Patriot. Like, these are the guys that are available right now. If Mike McCarthy has lost his job, everyone knows every team's. So you're the Titans, let's say. Bobby Slowick, offensive coordinator for the Texans, done a great job down there. Great job. 36 years old. Fantastic. Rookie quarterback? Hell yeah. Brian Callahan, same kind of deal. Do you say, you know what? That's where we want to go. A young guy you may have to Google. A young guy you may have to sort of, yeah, maybe get familiar with their background. Or here is Jim Harbaugh, Pete Carroll, Bill Belichick. If the choice is yours, and that's the dynamic in the coaching world. That's why I find it so fascinating in these last two weeks.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sportsnap Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us as we continue with Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio. Again, if you want to hit us up on X, Twitter, whatever you want to call it, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver, that is Ron with two N's. I think if you're Jim Harbaugh, you land with the Chargers and you don't look back, you're done. You've won your national championship. I know people are saying, well, he's waiting to decide whether he wants to go in the NFL or not. He's set to interview with the Atlanta Falcons, or he did interview with the Atlanta Falcons.
He did interview with the Atlanta Falcons.
So he already did that.
But,
you know.
It's like we say this every year, too. I mean, if you're a head coach and you're in demand and all these teams want, go get the dinner.
Go get the dinner. But go get the idea that you could go back to your current boss and get more money out of him.
True.
Like, they already offered him $220 million, a 10-year, $12 million a year contract, whatever it was. Maybe you can get more money out of it now that they know you're a hot item in the NFL. But at the same time, I know you want to do more interviews because, again, it's an enjoyable thing. It's an ego-feeding thing. I mean, especially when they are dying to hopefully have you. Like, we were just making the joke about Bill Belichick having an interview with the Falcons. That's just a calm word for it. I doubt there was any discussion about anything. You know, like if you're Bobby Slowick, all right, or if you're Mike McDonald, and you go for an interview, you show up with your plan. Like, this is what I would do. This is how I would do. You know, you come up with this is my idea for the defense. This is my idea for the offense. This is based on your team. This is what I think we could do, etc. Because you're showing. But if you're Bill Belichick, I mean, if I'm Arthur Blank, I'm like, if you were to take the job, could you be here tomorrow at noon? Like, what are we talking about?
I want to know what the questions are. Like, you know, Arthur Blank, does he go to an assistant and go, yeah, can you jot down a few questions for me to ask Bill?
Exactly.
Sure.
So, what do you like to do in your free time?
Watch football.
Got a boat.
Got a wife? Got kids? Like, what's your family life like? Just try to break the ice with them? Like, what else? Like, if you're Arthur Blank, you're probably going to hear more about your team the way Belichick sees it. That's probably more valuable than anything Bill Belichick would say he would do with your team.
The first thing
I would do is get rid of both quarterbacks.
Does he go to Arthur and go, now, listen, one thing I noticed during that 28-3 lead that you had.
Right, exactly. You were still throwing on third downs.
Here's what I would have done different in that Super Bowl. You know the one. That's an amazing thing. I just would love to hear what some of the interview questions are. I mean,
me too.
It fascinates me.
I'd love to know how they're talking.
And to that extent, right, is Bill Belichick to that point he'll never take a coordinator job?
Oh, no, I don't think he's taking a coordinator job, no.
Or, you know, would he do it for a friend type of thing?
From what I've been hearing, no, I don't think so, because I think there have been too many reports of people saying that getting the 15 victories to pass Don Shula is extremely important to him, because Shula ripped him a new one. And the organization after Spygate. You know, he said he was very bitter at the way Shula presented the Patriots and him during conversations to the media about what he thought of Spygate. And he wants desperately to pass him on the all-time coaching win list. So I don't think there is even a buddy coordinator thing. And also, I'm not saying people haven't done in the past. But when you've reached that level of pinnacle, like, are you going to work for somebody else? Like, really? Like, do you love it so much that you would? Like, it's one thing when you take a bench coach role in baseball because you're like, all right, I'll coach third base for my, you know, whatever. But it feels like a coordinator job is as tough as, I mean, you show up, you're working long hours, et cetera. I just can't imagine you've been in the league, you've coached 29 years in the league, that you would ever be a coordinator. Ever. Like, you could be an advisor in college, like that I would get, where you're not really on the staff, but you kind of are on the staff. That I would get. But I can't imagine being a defensive coordinator for somebody, unless it's your son, right?
Yeah, I guess that's the only way, right?
Yeah, if your son is like, if Steve Belichick got a job and he wanted his dad, that's when you would do it.
Do you think his sons will stay? I saw, you know, there are reports that Robert
I don't
Kraft
know much
offered-
about the relationship between them and Gerard Mayo to know if that's a deal.
Yeah, I mean, they were offered jobs to stay with the Patriots, but I don't know. I would think, like, well, you just fired my dad, even though you didn't say you fired my dad.
I would wait to my I would be waiting to see where my dad landed, and to see if he had any interest in bringing me aboard to what he was doing. But again, these guys have their own lives. I mean, you don't know how much they like the school system or New England or the friends. And they know Gerard Mayo very well. It's not a brand new guy coming in cleaning house. I would probably wait to see where my dad landed and then go join him somewhere, you know, because that's the only thing I know. I mean, these kids were little, you know, when he got the job with New England in 2000. And now they've grown up, you know, in New England as a Patriot, part of the Patriot thing. I'd probably wait to see where he landed. Plus, as you know, as we get older, the more time you can spend with your parents, the better. So maybe that's the case.
I also always wonder if that weighs in. I mean, I know it does weigh into these coaches' decisions, but like for someone like Jim Harbaugh, what, he has three girls? I know he has like four kids. I know he has a son or two sons as well. But with those four kids, I mean, they've been living in Michigan now, what, for five, six years?
It absolutely plays a decision. I've seen it too many times. Yeah.
You know, because you're up. I mean, we often forget. We think the coach is just going to go, but you're literally uprooting the entire family.
That's right. You're selling your house. You're moving someplace else.
Because a player can go and just say, hey, you know what, I'm going to go to work. Daddy's got to, you know. He's got an out-of-town job that he's going to go take care of. But as a coach, I mean, you're literally there year-round.
Oh, no. You can't have your wife living in Michigan while you're the head coach of the Chargers.
Yeah.
You are the head coach of the Chargers every single day. There's no off-season. Where the players, right, have off-season. They can go home. They can go, hey, look, I got an apartment in Baltimore, but we really like living in Phoenix.
Yep.
You know, that happens a lot.
But a coach,
but,
I mean,
but
you're
a coach. No, that's your job now. That's the place you live. It's like anything else. It's like, If you were hired to be senior accountant at a place in Palo Alto, you need to move to Palo Alto. That's it. Your whole family needs to move
And it's probably more prevalent for a college coach because you're you need to know that area.
College coaching, you're done too. You are not going back home to visit your wife and kids on the weekends.
That's
pretty much done as well. But yeah, I mean, and that is a factor. I've seen it and I've heard about it many times. Coaches have looked taking lateral jobs, really, one NFL team to another NFL team, and they've said, "Nah, I'll just stay where I'm at." College does the same thing. Like if it's again, it's more lateral moves. Where you are a coach at a major Power 5 conference team.
DeBoer.
Yeah, DeBoer, right? I mean, maybe he said to Alabama, I like it in Seattle. We like it here. You know, I don't want to take it. But the lure of a program like Alabama that is going to give you everything you want. Look, Alabama is going to provide Kalen DeBoer way more than he's ever getting in Washington. Money's no object. Staff is no object. You basically become the most popular person in the state while you're winning. And when you're winning, nothing is any object. I mean, you're going to get the full support of every single person in the state if you continue to win games. Win games, your life becomes a living hell.
Do you think day one, it's like, this is how we sign steal? You know, Michigan was at full.
Right.
This is how we get away with it.
But, I mean, even just walking through, I mean, I'm sure the Washington Huskies locker room's nice, but have you seen Alabama's? It's like a six-star resort. I mean, what they've got in Alabama. I mean, it's crazy. I mean, what you're going from and to. And plus, a lot of these guys think about what it means to say no, right? Kalen DeBoer, if he was asked, we would like you to take the Alabama, you say no, they're never offering it to you again, no matter what you do. You have to have some time, some distance between you saying no and you getting asked again. Because they're not going to do that again. They're not going to grovel twice. If you go to Washington and you continue to get to national championship games and do well in the playoff, they may come 4 or 5 years later, maybe 6 years later, but they ain't doing it. You very unlikely that you're going to get your chance. So you have to know what you want out of the business, right? I see people do this all the time in our business. Our business is a bounce around from city to city. You know, when I was meeting up with a high school friend of mine once, and she said, "Boy, you've lived in a lot of places." I'm like, "Yeah, because my job, that's what happens. You get asked to work in other cities, or you're up for jobs in other cities. Not usually." In the city you're in, because there might be one place to do it. There might be two places to do it. That's it. So it's like coaching. Like, do you want to be the head coach at Alabama? Do you want to be at the premier program ever? Well, here's your opportunity. And it's probably once in a lifetime that's going to come your way. And even if you don't do as well at it, you at least have the confidence enough to say, well, I believe in myself enough to do it, that I'm going to go do it. But it's, but Alabama, as I said earlier, when they offered it to Kalen DeBoer, they knew that they needed him to say yes, because a couple of people said no, and they needed him to say yes. You don't want to be a program nobody wants to go to. That doesn't look good. You have to find your guy that's enthusiastically getting on the private jet, landing and shaking hands and kissing babies at the airport. That's what you're looking for. All right, we will continue. It's Wake Up Call on Sports Fan Radio. Good Wednesday to you. Looking at the divisional matchups in the NFL. Some other news and notes. Got a couple of NBA games last night, too, that were really, really big. We'll talk about that coming up as we continue. It's Wake Up Call.
Wake Up Call with Tony D and Ron Culver continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
By the way, is this Poison? The band?
Yeah.
Poison? I thought so. I know I've been hearing this a lot lately in our bumper music, and I just remember going, yeah, this is Poison. This is Bret Michaels and CC DeVille and those guys. I love games, and when the outcome is over, the team that won has no idea how they won. I love that. Last night, Phoenix beat Sacramento 119-117, coming back and by a 22-point deficit in the fourth quarter. They were down by 22 in the fourth quarter and came back and won the game. Kevin Durant was asked afterwards, how do you explain this? And he goes, I have no clue. I usually know how the game is flowing, but I felt like this was a blur. Everything happened so fast. I guess we're all in a zone and locked in. Yeah, that's all I can do. That's all I can explain it. 22 points down in the fourth quarter, and the Suns rallied a win by two, beating Sacramento last night. Don't know how you do it. Love that. Last night, the Philadelphia 76ers and the Denver Nuggets played last night. And unfortunately, we lost power, and so I didn't get to see the ending of this game, but it was 78-78 at halftime between two MVPs and Joel Embiid and Nikola Jokic. Yeah, I mean, it was
insane. A lot of defense right there.
The Sixers were shooting 64% at halftime. The Nuggets were, I think, were 58-59 at halftime. Insane. And then we lost. We had a little power outage last night, and I just gave up, and I just went, all right, go to bed. Figure it out when in the morning. Finally, power came on. We've been having these like rolling blackouts since our storm of the century, which is basically every year, landed in Middle Tennessee, basically burying us in snow, and we don't have clear roads. And this is where the power company goes, hey, if you guys wouldn't mind, like, don't have every light on in the house, and if you don't mind, don't turn your thermostat up to 75. Like, if you could just help us out a little bit, because we got a lot of power drain, and everybody goes, nah, that'll be somebody else's problem. And next thing you know, boom, we're done.
It's what caused the great blackout of 2021 here in Texas.
That's right. Sure. Exactly.
Well, that and the ERCOT, our power grid, failed.
I'll let the Smith family down the road sit in a freezer. That's not going to be me turn it up to 73. Exactly. That's what happened. Yeah.
No, they always say you just be comfortable at 68.
So I went to bed last night, bundled up in a blanket, fell asleep, woke up. What did I wake up to? Blinking everything. Everything that had a clock on it, blinking.
You know, we have a home alarm that we don't use.
Right.
Ever. Like, I mean, ever. But anytime there's a power failure, the thing trips.
Oh, okay.
But it's not enough. I mean, it doesn't send a signal to the company or anything like that. We don't have people showing up at our house or calling us. But it sends off this loud beeping sound that sounds like a bomb is about to go off. And I hate it because it'll happen in the middle of the night.
Yeah.
You know, we'll just have a little power surge because, you know, and this still to me does not make sense. Maybe you can explain it to me that when, you know, if there is a grid without power, they sometimes got to turn your power off to turn their power back on, and then yours comes on almost immediately.
I'm not really sure how that works. It's a funny point because right now in our town, people are saying they still don't have power. We do have power, you know, but some areas don't. And I know this is purposeful. They're trying to divert. You get a little bit of it, then you get a little bit of it, then you get, because we're draining the system incredibly.
Yeah. Because you guys are built for it.
As a town. Where, you know, this is day three of this winter storm that has basically paralyzed the city.
Like in a state like Wisconsin, Michigan, Minnesota, where they deal with these Arctic temperatures and tons of snow all the time. Do they lose power? I never hear about it.
I never hear about it, except I hear about it when a power line goes down, right? But never hear about it like, well, we're rolling blackouts because everybody's got a
100,000 people
system.
Are without power.
This is
they
what
always
doing.
Seem to have enough.
Yeah, that's how you roll. But it is, I mean, freezing.
But that whole thing of, you know, hey, I got to turn your power off to turn theirs on. Yeah. It always cracks me up because it's, you know, it's just a little glitch. Like last night we had a little pop that, you know, made all our clocks go off and, you know, do that whole thing. But it wasn't off that long, but it was because they needed to turn another grid on. So we got to turn your power off to turn theirs on. And then we just put yours on again.
So I did miss the ending of the Sixers Nuggets game. And I was, you know, because I'm, you know, Nuggets playing, they're playing good, but they're not Minnesota. Minnesota leads the Western Conference, and the Sixers, of course, have keep getting Joel Embiid in and out of their lineup. And it was ended up being a good game for a Wednesday in between playoff weekends in the NFL. But I didn't get to see the end of it because, get that blanket out because it's gonna be starting to get chilly. And that's basically what I did. So. Winter weather stinks. I don't know why. Yes. I'm still. I like warm weather. Those of you in warm weather climates, you can complain all you want about how hot it is in the summer, but believe me, it stinks when it's minus 10.
Yeah,
can't deal with that.
But I mean, for you guys though, it's not like this all
it's
the
never
time.
Never like it. It's never like this. Well, I shouldn't say never. Every now and then we'll get a snow, and it shuts the city down. And then it gets to be 50-something degrees again, and it's gone. This is lasting a good into next week. Good into next week, these cold temperatures. Because I don't know if this – I'm not a weather guy, but I have no idea why this Arctic bubble is just kind of hanging
polar
around
vortex.
And just staying with us.
That's what we had.
Like I'm in the day after tomorrow, and Dennis Quaid is – walking from Philadelphia to New York City, Washington to New York City, to get his kid. Right?
Have you seen him lately? Has he walked by your house yet?
Yeah, has he walked by my house? What a dumb movie that was. Remember what dumb that movie was?
Oh, no. It was great. We will not disparage any natural disaster movie on this show.
I don't like the idea that a guy thought the best way to get from Washington to New York was walking and getting his son in time to save him from Arctic temperatures.
No, he made it to Philadelphia or just past Philadelphia.
How?
He drove. Remember? They drove.
Oh, that's right.
And then they just, the snow got too thick and then they had to walk.
So he decided to walk 100 plus miles in Arctic, where you're going to average 4 miles a day. In those freezing temperatures, like,
no,
it's okay.
No, he
because
did
he thought
four
to
days.
Himself, by the time I get to my son, it'll be July, and it should be warm again.
Yeah.
How in the world do you get there?
I wonder. You know, be honest.
Did anybody do the math on how much you could walk in those in wintry blizzard conditions?
Well,
from Philadelphia to New York.
Tony, remember,
in an emergency,
he was used to the snow because remember he and his team did work in Antarctica.
I don't care if you're a polar bear. How far? how quick are you going from Philadelphia to New York walking? Like I think this is escaping the idiot writers. It's forever. it's going to take you a month at least to walk it. You're not walking. You're not doing 20 miles a day. So, yeah, I didn't like that movie. I wasn't. Don't look up anything. I hear you clicking.
I'm just trying to see.
We're going to get into a sports take, and then in the middle of the sports take, you go, I just looked it up, and it's 87 miles. No, don't worry about it. I'm never going to change my mind on a fictional movie about freezing weather. But I am going to tell you that Buffalo could be getting it again this weekend. Did
yes,
you hear that?
Sir. Yep.
Did you hear that?
I love it. I absolutely love this.
This weekend, Chiefs-Bills could be playing on a Tuesday, depending on this winter storm that's hitting upstate New York again.
The NFL, you know what? It's going to happen. The NFL is going to come forward and go, hey, Buffalo, you guys just can't host anymore.
Right. Oh, I'm sure that's going to go over well. I'm sure that they're building a brand new multi-billion dollar stadium that doesn't have a dome. I shouldn't say multi-billion. It's like 1.4 billion.
Well,
once
you get over a billion, isn't that multi?
Well, yeah, in order to be multi-billion, you have to be multi-billion. Once you get 1.4, it's really multi-hundred million.
Yeah. But what if it's 2 billion?
Correct.
That's multi-billion.
2 billion, that's multi-billion. You can say that. And I think the Giant Stadium was over 2 billion, if I'm not mistaken. That could be multi-billion. But if you're 1.4, you're not going to get
it. Another round.
But, yeah, they decided, we're not going to build a new stadium, no dome. So this is what we're going to have for forever.
Do you think Buffalo plays it anyways? Saying the Steelers are kind of used to this cold weather stuff, but maybe the Chiefs aren't used to the snow. They're used to cold weather. Which, by the way, did you see that?
Well, they don't play. Unless it's snowing, they're not. If it's just cold.
If it's
that's
just cold,
they're
going to play.
Unless it's snowing.
A lot. Not just a little, hey, snowflakes are falling and it's covering the field.
Right.
We're talking feet of snow.
But you know what I always wondered about that, though? Like, if you were to look at Josh Allen's career, like, how many how many games has he played in a snowstorm? And just a handful. It's not like they're filled with tons and tons of experience at it. Cold weather, yeah, that happens every year. But, like, actual snowstorms where it's, like, whiteout conditions where it's coming down, a couple of times. But that doesn't happen all the time.
No, not at all.
You know what I mean?
All.
It's not like it's an everyday occurrence that they are. So when we say the Bills are used to it, how much used to it are they? I mean, they've done it four times more than Kansas City players. You know, it's. But the Chiefs had a game in which like four people like had to go to the hospital for cold weather temperatures, sitting in the stands.
Hypothermia.
So yeah. Well, the storm could be coming into Buffalo this weekend. All right, we'll continue. Good, the bad, and the dumb in hour number two as we continue. It's Wake Up Call.